But wow. Does this change?
You know where that is in the state?
I do not know where Wascom is. Okay. That, yeah. You got me on that
where
one.
Where is that, bud?
It's on the Louisiana line.
And, okay.
And what's the best restaurant there,
well,
bud?
The Wascom Cafe.
Is on,
the story there is the Wascom Cafe used to face the old Highway 80 to Louisiana. And when they built the freeway behind the cafe, they came up and picked up the jacked up the cafe and turned it around so it faced the highway.
And then the best dish is black and catfish, or what is it?
Well, the black eyed peas are pretty good.
I want to go there just for that story.
You go on the road.
That's amazing. Tremendous.
Guess where we are. It's pretty easy.
We're at Yolotic Studio.
Yeah, you've got pretty good chances of getting
we
this
always
one
get
right.
The same table here. The reserve sign is still on the table here.
We get the same table. He orders the same beer every single time.
Creature of habit here.
They know our name when we walk in.
Yeah, always welcome us here. So our shout out early on here, before we even get going, to our friends at Manhattan Project Beer Company on the west side of the Dallas skyline here, always willing to host Yolotic. Mm-hmm. And we're back just before Election Day, this runoff election. So that's what this episode is going to be all about here. Man, this is a bitter one.
Oof.
On the right and the left. Democrats are tangled up with each other, angry at each other, not talking to each other.
Yeah.
And man, the Republicans, I don't know what's going to happen.
Lighting
on the right.
Some stuff on fire there. And it's not only bitter, but also quite expensive.
Speaking of bitter, what are you having there, man? What are you drinking?
You know what? That is a nice segue. Having the Bikini Atoll. Everything here, you know, if you've listened to us over time, Manhattan Project, obviously, it's sort of an atomic theme. You're having the Necessary Evil. I'm having the Bikini Atoll. It is a sour cherry lime.
And there it was, guys. Cherry.
Cherry. And lime.
He has to have a beer with a fruit in it.
I actually haven't had a beer with a fruit in it in
since the last episode, right?
Like at least a week.
Last week, right?
No, it's been a long time since I've done it. And I saw that on the menu. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that.
Yeah. You got a big birthday
and
coming up, too, man.
It is tart.
Happy birthday to you. Early happy birthday.
My birthday drink, I guess.
Yeah.
It looks like a Big Red.
It does look a bit. Remember those?
Oh, I love Big Red.
Yeah, I'm trying to explain to my kids, and they're like, nah, Dad, I'm good. I don't want to have a red soda.
Yeah,
no.
Wait till they have their first one. They'll fall in love.
They'll be hooked on this unique thing. So we have our friends back who know a lot more about this than we do. Jessica Huzman from VoteBeat.org. And Bud Kennedy from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Guys, thanks for being here. Bud, your coffee's on the way. What are you having, Jessica?
I'm just having some kind of coffee, I think. So
old-school drip.
The priest at church has had me out late having too many beers. I got to have a coffee today.
Bud. He said, before we hit record, Bud said, yeah, is it a visiting priest?
The visiting priest. He comes. He wants to drink beer. I can't handle it.
Oh, that's a real story. I thought you were kidding.
No, he has a visiting priest who wants to have a beer with, trying to find someone to have a beer with. Bud says, yeah, I'll volunteer.
Yeah.
And he drinks money. He's
wearing me out.
A few years back, when I was in St. Louis, worked there for a few years, I decided to have a vodka drinking contest with a buddy of mine who is Russian. My wife put a quick stop to that.
Oh, that was a bad move. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. I'm like a third one. I'm like, okay, I'm good. He's not even hasn't even cracked the surface on this.
Jeez.
Guy. But anyways, what are you having, Jess?
I'm having a Quarter Life. Half Life is my favorite IPA that is brewed
IPAs.
Locally. You know I love an IPA. That's
You're
my thing.
You're one of the cool kids.
I'm very cool. Yeah. Thank you.
You do like the IPAs.
I really like them. And so, but this is the Quarter Life, which has less alcohol in it, which I thought was appropriate given that it is the afternoon. But maybe I'll have a second one.
It is a bit
out.
Early.
Yeah.
Oh, here comes your coffee, bud. It's
okay,
a pour over.
It's pretty big and steamy. And
it is.
I'll sip
thank
a little
you
bit.
So much.
I'll see appreciate if I can't it. Not spill this on you.
And
so
Bud drinks it straight, man.
Yeah, this is
old school right there.
I want the motor oil blend, but this is good.
But this is a pour over, bud. It's
nice
a little
viscosity.
More refined.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all right.
No
that's
thermal
good.
Breakdown?
It has no cherry in it whatsoever.
I don't think
you'd like
for
it.
You.
It's a real man's drink, isn't it, bud? Yeah. Instead of drinks. And then you have Wheeler over here. Let's get into Election Day is upon us here, and the biggest race out there is the U.S. Senate race. John Cornyn, Ken Paxton on the right here. The big news the other day, that endorsement finally came through from President Trump. Ken Paxton got it. No one was really sure who was going to get it. What does that mean, Bud, and does it help him lock up this nomination?
You know, Jason, I think what happened, President Trump was very close to endorsing John Cornyn. after the primary. The senators all asked him to do it. Cornyn had led the primary, was winning. It looked like he was going to endorse, you know, John Cornyn, but then he backed off. And then, you know, Ken Paxton made this dramatic move of saying, look, I'll drop out of the race if you all just pass the Vote Act. So then he held off. And so now what's happened is the President Trump always loves to be a winner. In this case, he saw the bandwagon rolling and decided to announce that he was the one who built it.
Okay, so he already felt like it was going this way.
Yeah. Do you think that means, does this mean that Paxton has the nomination locked up? Or does Cornyn still have a shot? We saw it happen at Thomas Massie in Kentucky, Bill Cassidy in Louisiana. Is Cornyn cooked?
Well, you look at the early voting, and the early voting has been very strong in Cornyn's strong areas. So
the metro area.
First of all, let's talk about the big surprise. A lot of people are voting, and that doesn't happen usually in these runoffs the day after Memorial Day. People are sleeping late. Mm-hmm. They're hanging out around the pool. It's hot. They're getting over the golf tournament or whatever. People are actually voting in this runoff. There are a lot of early votes this week. So actually, the numbers look pretty good for John Cornyn, like he was in the ballpark. The polls, some of them are even. Some of them say Paxton's winning. But, you know, I think now you have to say that, you know, Trump will push Paxton over the top.
Jessica, this is a late endorsement, though, too. I mean, early voting's already underway. A lot of people have already cast their ballots. Is this endorsement too late to have enough oomph?
You know what? I don't think so. I think that there has been a trend, especially in Texas over the last couple of years, that Republicans vote closer and closer to Election Day. They're voting less early than they used to. There's not a lot of amazing data about that, but the data that we have does suggest that at least some of Trump's, you know, strange comments about what we should all vote on Election Day and early voting is bad, mail voting is bad. Some of these things are breaking through. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that it's too late. I also think that, you know, the Republican turnout is down pretty significantly across the country, including in Texas. The runoff numbers are surprising, but they're still much lower than you're going to see in the general election. And so I think the type of voter that turns out is a more dedicated voter whose mind could, you know, may or may not be changed by Trump's endorsement of Paxton. So we'll see. This is a really interesting dynamic.
And let's talk about that for a moment, because Ragnar Research put out this survey of Republican voters who just decided they weren't interested in showing up and decided to bail out. This is a good sampling size. There are 4,800.
That's a huge sampling size.
That's a good sampling. Yeah,
it's pretty good.
That's a really, really good sampling.
You know, when
size
you led off
the
podcast saying, let's talk about the big thing that happened the other day, that's the first thing that jumped to my mind. It wasn't even the endorsement. It was that survey. It was a stunning survey.
Well, yeah, the survey, though, I mean, the top line of this thing, if you haven't seen this anywhere, is the fact that Republicans just are not energized or motivated this cycle here. Trump's not on the ballot. That's probably some of it here. But who does that hurt more, Bud?
Well, even more so, the survey showed that half the Republicans who have regularly voted in primaries, or, you know, regular Republican voters, are not interested, that they either don't like the president or don't like the party. More of them are unhappy with the party. So it means that the Republican, the intensity is low, the energy, the spirit is low, and you don't know how that's going to translate. You go to November, and you have Governor Abbott, who has this giant get-out-the-vote machine. So you have him cranking up his apps in people's pockets and everything else. Then you have, you know, the whole effort by whatever the Republicans pour in to win the Senate race, and you have Lieutenant Governor Patrick and the other efforts down the ballot. You know, it is true that Greg Abbott is going to have to carry this ticket.
What do you think about this Ragnar Research, this survey?
You know, I mean, I think that Republicans are in a real pickle here. I think there is a difference between the types of Republicans who win in a Republican primary and the types of Republicans who can meaningfully do well in this political environment in a general. And so I think that, you know, you're seeing Republicans getting really uncomfortable, especially in Congress and in the Senate, looking at all of this. Because I think they're not sustaining Republican enthusiasm in the way that they should be in order to turn them out in that general way. What they're talking about instead is things that Americans by and large hate, right? The ballroom, the Iran war. They are not talking about affordability.
Gas prices, yeah.
They're dismissing the concept that gas prices are a huge economic problem for many Americans. And so I think that they're not doing enough to talk about normal issues that Republicans care about. And so what we're left with is this revenge tour that Trump has been on for the entire time he's been in office. And the only people that motivates are the die-hard MAGA voters. And what we're seeing, I think, and especially if you take a look at the poll that you referenced, or the survey that you referenced, is that the MAGA coalition is becoming less and less big and less defining. The ones that still exist are still voting, they're still turning out, but you know, there's a ton of people on that precipice, right? They don't, you know, they're voting and they like it, but as soon as something happens that they don't like, and that's sustained over time, I think you see them falling off. Like, what? You know, his approval ratings are very low, but I think something else that's interesting is how long they have been this low, right? It's sustained disinterest from the Republican Party, and that should worry them.
A few things that stood out to me from that Ragnar analysis was, first of all, if you're not familiar with that name, this is not like a liberal-leaning polling firm. I mean, this is conservative through and through. Mm-hmm. They found significant portions of people in the GOP voters, the two things that they were most unhappy with were unhappy with the Republican Party overall and unhappy with the current administration. They said these people are not only not wanting to vote right now, they're not even wanting to take part in surveys, in polls, and that they're sort of pulling back. And these are people who have voted time and time again. And they say that of the people that they're looking at here, 41% of them, and this is just among GOP, 41% of them said they would not vote in any primary. 32% were unsure about which primary. These are Republicans. And 27% indicated that they would vote in the Democratic primary. And then they go on to say that, you know, those numbers didn't bear out exactly that way, but they saw a lot of people who crossed over and decided to vote in the Democratic primary, and these are GOP voters. Bud, do these people, though, come home when we get to November? I mean, we've seen before that, you know, people have said, oh, you know, GOP civil war here in Texas. But in the end, in November, it's like they always come home. Do they come home this time?
Some of these people, you know, we saw this. We actually have our laboratory example in the special election in Tarrant County, where Taylor Ahmed was elected over Lee Wamsgunson.
A lot of people were shocked by that.
25% of registered Republicans, if you do the subtraction, try to add the numbers, 25% of Republicans must have voted for the Democrat, Taylor Ahmed. They didn't just stay home.
Yeah.
They came out and voted for the Democrat. So part of what's happening there is you have this big middle of Texas Republicans who habitually voted Republican. They voted for the Bushes. They voted for Rick Perry. They voted for Kay Bailey Hutchison. So they're always Republicans. They show up as Republicans, but they're not that interested in all this MAGA. And they say, well, I don't know if I'm going to vote Republican this time. Mm. Some of them, I think, went out and voted to help James Tallarico get the nomination. Mm. And some of them just stayed home. So you have this disinterest. I will tell you that in a county like Tarrant County that is not on the verge of swinging, but is at least purple, and you know, say we within a 4 or 5 point race, Republicans are very concerned about this. You knock out this much of their vote, and all of a sudden Democrats are winning offices, and they're very concerned about the lack of enthusiasm.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the Remet example in that special election, because we're talking about primaries here, and it's easy to go, well, you know, there's just some jostling going on. Maybe they want to pick off a Democratic candidate in the primary, and that's why they switched over. But if you use that as an example, that was a special election, and they knew this guy is going to be elected if I go and vote for him, and a lot of Republicans did that.
Yeah, in that election, the Republicans had a flawed candidate who was popular in Southlake with a segment of the party, but you know, also it was really not popular in Keller at all, which had been a strong Republican area. It'd been active in the whole divide the Keller school district effort and everything else. And you know, on the Democratic side, you had somebody who was against all that, and also who was the head of the union at Lockheed Martin, huge defense employer, and so you had a big advantage. So you actually had 25% of the Republicans didn't stay home. They crossed over. They voted for the Democrat. The Republicans are afraid that'll happen again.
And this is for that state Senate seat, I think number 9.
State Senate seat, former Kelly Hancock seat, which is
right.
North Tarrant County, mostly everything north of I-30 plus the near south side.
Yeah, it was
Florida.
Supposed to be solid red there. But let me ask you about that, Jessica, because that seat, Lee Wamsgans, who Bud was talking about, she was a Republican. She was a farther right Republican, a MAGA candidate. The president endorsed her. The president also, and she lost, the president also endorsed the Texas Agriculture Commissioner, Sid Miller. Alfredo Rodriguez from Dice Communications, another Republican we talk to frequently, pointed that out, you know, immediately after the endorsement of Ken Paxton, saying, well, this doesn't necessarily mean Paxton has it locked up. What do you make of that? Because not all of Trump's endorsements have resulted in wins, but at least a few high-profile ones like Thomas Massie in Kentucky, Bill Cassidy in Louisiana, those have lost.
You know, this is such an interesting thing. I think, you know, if you take a look holistically at all of the endorsements Trump has made, he's certainly out ahead. That dips a little in Texas for the reasons that you say. And I think one of the reasons that Trump felt, as Bud said earlier, one of the reasons that Trump felt that he could go for Paxton was that it's just impossible for, like, I think in his mind, it is impossible for a Democrat to be a senator in Texas. That is so beyond the realm of possibility that whichever Republican he endorses is definitely going to beat James Tallarico. I think the polls do not bear that out. And I think that he suffers from the same sort of myopic view of the Texas Republican voter that a lot of people suffer from, right? Like, when I go on national news, they want to talk to me about how MAGA Texas is. And I just don't think that's true. That I don't see that every day. I don't see it borne out in the polls. And so I think that Texas is much more politically diverse than the president realizes. And so, yes, his endorsement is powerful, but we are talking about a man that everyone in Texas knows, right? And nobody knows for good reasons, right? And so I, whether or not
there's
his
the impeachment, the divorce,
there's the impeachment, the there's the divorce, there's the bad behavior, there's the weird spending, there's the strange things he just says on a daily basis, there's the failure to prosecute child sex trafficking. You know, I mean, like, there are a laundry list of problems with this candidate.
There were with the president, too.
Yes. And so, you know, I just think, I think that while his endorsement is powerful, it is not as powerful in Texas as he thinks that it is, because Texas is not as politically unified as he believes.
This point, I just want to take issue with this, because if you look at the Texas Politics Project poll, the same poll that told
UT.
Us, the UT, the same poll that told us Tallarico was running a close race, if you read down, it says that if you compare to 2018, when Beto led the ticket, ran a close race, the Democrats all ran a close race, that back then the Democrats were 3 points behind the Republicans, now they're 10 points behind. The state overall, the voters overall, have a 50% negative view of the Democratic Party. Hmm. They're more likely to believe that the Bible is literally the Word of God than in 2018. Well, I mean, if you look at it, Texas is arguably more Republican now than in 2018.
But so, didn't the Texas Politics Project find Tallarico leading both of these?
Obviously, the problems are with the candidates, and we know that there are people on the religious right who are unable to accept Ken Paxton as the candidate. I could peel off some names.
Well, I think
know.
That's what I mean by politically diverse, right? I'm not suggesting that we're more Democrat than people yeah. think that we are. But I am suggesting that Republicanism looks different. It's not whole, like, it's not MAGA Republican everywhere,
there's
right?
Factions.
There are factions of the Republicans that cannot stomach this candidate.
But speaking of factions, when I look at the state leaders, John Cornyn is the last man standing of the Ronald Reagan, George Bush Republicans.
But he's changed, though. He has had to go further right.
He has. And
he cozied up to Trump a lot, only to not get the endorsement.
Right. We'll see how successful it is. But if he does not win on Tuesday, there's nobody else after him. I mean, I think it's a full shift to MAGA in this state at that point.
Well, Governor Abbott, I think, still is from that group, although he is further right. He's always been more conservative as a conservative Catholic. He's always been more conservative than the Perry, Hutchison, Cornyn, Bush leadership.
And then after COVID, he went far right.
He was dragged far right by Don Huffines and other
Shelley
opponents.
Luther.
Right, but yeah. I think Abbott is still from that. But you're right that there is nobody left from the Texas leadership group. You have this tense balance in the Texas House where the business leaders and the establishment still have some pull.
And did you guys see, you know, Phil Gramm, the former U.S. Senator? I have to say that because I don't think people might not know who Phil Gramm is anymore, but the former, you know, very well-respected U.S. Senator out campaigning with Cornyn. Rick Perry, former governor, out campaigning with Cornyn. Are these guys going to have any sway? I mean, again, this is the old school Texas Republicans. I just don't know if they have the influence that they did 15, 20 years ago.
I think, oh, go ahead.
No, you please. I'm much more interested in hearing what you have to say about this.
I think the problem, part of the problem is older Republicans can still do well. Older Republicans can still have a lot of sway. But I think the problem is that John Cornyn's energy level didn't really build up. He didn't really say his whole term that he was running up for another term. He didn't go around and talk to catfish dinners in Dalhart like he has in his other terms. He seemed like he wasn't sure whether he was running again. And then he's kicked it in late and rallied all the pals and pulled the troops together. But it seems like he's kind of making a last-ditch effort to keep Ken Paxton off the ticket. And I think that, you know, voters are reacting to that. It's not a whole, wow, look at everything John Cornyn's done. Sure, let's reelect him. That memory isn't built up. But you have to, you do, once you stay in Washington 2 years, much less 20 years, you have to keep introducing yourself in the home district.
Yep.
You know, somebody who's at home in Texas in their home district always has an advantage over someone who has to come home from Washington every weekend. The people know who you are right here in your home district. If you're in Washington all the time, you have to keep reminding them what you're doing.
They remember too.
Yeah, they remember who was eating with him at that catfish dinner and who wasn't there.
Right.
Let's talk about this midterm, because a lot has been said about the, you know, it's obviously always a tough time for the party in power to hang on. That's firmly Republicans in D.C. You know, a lot of folks have been, you know, saying that there's going to be a blue wave. We'll see if there's a blue wave. But it is a tough environment for the incumbent party in charge. With that considered, though, can either one of these men, and I'm talking about Cornyn and Paxton, can they afford to lose any percentage of that Republican bloc? And I ask that because that same Texas Politics Project poll said that 15% of them said that they were Paxton-only supporters. This is among GOP people that they polled. 15%. Paxton only. So in other
words, libertarian.
That intimates that they're saying I won't go vote for Cornyn if he gets
Ted
through
Brown
this.
Is the name of the libertarian. They'll
and then
for
and then on the Cornyn side, 10% of them said I'm Cornyn only. In other words, come November, if it's Paxton who gets through, I sit home or I go vote for somebody else.
Yeah.
Does that really pan out like that? And can either one of these men afford to lose percentages of the GOP like that here in Texas, especially in a tough year?
You know, I mean, I think given where Republican enthusiasm is, I think that poll is probably pretty accurate and would stick. I don't know. I mean, I want to hear what Bud has to say about this, but
The ads have been nasty. I mean, they have taken each other down hard. And how do you...
Extraordinarily nasty.
How do you convince somebody come November that, you know, that person I was talking about there, they're not as bad as I said?
Exactly. And I think to Bud's point earlier, neither of them, I mean, one more than the other, but neither of them are particularly running on their own merits. They are running on how awful the other guy is, which, you know, doesn't suggest that these voters are just going to stomach voting for the other guy, right? Like, a lot of this is bound up in I hate Cornyn a lot or I hate Paxton a lot, and has, you know, less to do or as much to do with how much they like the candidate himself. And so that strikes me as going to play out, you know, I think 10 out of 10. But I don't think either of them can afford those losses.
I think those numbers are pretty small. I mean, we know that 5% of Republicans refuse to vote for Donald Trump. 5% of Republicans turns out to 2.5-3% of the vote. So that's the amount of swing. We saw the Houston poll last week, a different poll from the University of Houston, from Texas Southern University, actually, that showed that there was a one-point difference in the Tallarico race if it was Cornyn or Paxton running. I think that there are a few Republicans, 2%, 3%, maybe 5%, who won't come out and vote if their candidate's not elected. I don't know if it's enough to make that difference. If it's a one-point difference, if it's a one-point margin, it probably won't make the difference. If 3%, you know, change their mind or vote for the other side, that might be enough to lift a Democrat into winning.
I'm not sold on. Listen, Tallarico's a fantastic fundraiser. He's a great candidate. He's what the Democrats have wanted for a long time. He hasn't had the full force of the Republican machine against him yet. No. They've been going at each other so far. I'm just not sold that he can even defeat, Paxton. If it's him and Paxton, even what Cook Political Report says, if Paxton's the nominee against Tallarico, it's still a lean R, not a likely R district, but lean R. And you know, blue wave. But we should delete that. Daryl, can we bleep over that blue wave comment? I don't want to be. Yeah,
he has to start by bringing out Jasmine Crockett's voters and uniting them. I mean, that's step one.
He's had deep trouble.
So. Got to get her on the campaign trail with him too.
Yeah, I mean, and that's is that going to happen? I mean, we'll see. I mean, he has to start out by bringing Jasmine Crockett's voters back and bringing back the older Latino voters in the Valley who jumped over to Trump last time and are now upset about the immigration enforcement. You know, that's step one for him, is can he bring all the Democrats back together? We don't even know he can do that.
No, we don't know if he can do that. But I will say one point in his favor is that these are the polls, and he has not really spent any money at all yet. He hasn't had to. He's been watching as Cornyn and Paxton tear themselves apart.
And making a lot of money
while that's happening. And so I think what I'm waiting to see is whether or not, now that the full force of the Democratic Party is behind his candidacy and hasn't been split, if they can get it together and actually message in a way that's effective
but
for Texas.
Can they?
You know, historically, they have not succeeded. So we will see. I will say, though, that I very frequently go to universities and talk to groups of mass young people. And I will say that in the entire time that I have been covering politics or politics adjacent things in Texas and doing this, I have never seen young people more excited about a Texas Senate candidate.
Not even Beto.
Really?
Those young people were very excited about Beto O'Rourke in 2018. And I believe the numbers show that 40% of the people who went to Beto rallies never voted.
Right.
Really? Young people didn't actually vote.
And that's the hard thing, is that,
Turning
I think
out,
that,
yeah.
And that's, I think, the difference that I'm sensing between these young people that I've been talking to, is they see the situation as more compelling and driving them to the polls. And that has very little to do with James Tallarico, but it's happening at an interesting time where they're sort of seeing the world shut down around them, or that's how they feel. And then there's this candidate that they're really excited about. Whether or not that plays in terms of voter turnout under the age of 30, I have no idea. We will see. But it's an interesting time.
It is. If someone says they're going to vote, if a young person says they're going to vote, ask them, show me your voter card. Make sure you're registered. Ask them, where do you usually vote? What's your polling place? What are the hours when you go to vote? See if they actually know how to vote. A lot of young people do not know how to vote.
Do you carry a voting card, though, bud?
I carried it to the polls.
Do you really?
This week, yeah.
Okay.
But you don't have to. You can vote with your driver's license. I had it right there, I brought it.
Speaking of this example here, Congressman Thomas Massey, the Republican from Kentucky, who has been the thorn in President Trump's side over the Epstein files.
Yeah.
When I saw the breakdown the other day of his loss, and he had all of the young vote from 18 to 39, and folks in the middle, Wheeler's age, they didn't vote
How
as
about
high.
The old people your age?
The old people.
What'd they do?
All of us, bud. We all voted.
No, way up there.
The older folks all voted for the opponent, the Trump endorsed opponent, who actually ended up winning.
Mm.
So getting that young vote out is going to be a challenge for either party.
I'm curious what
there are no young Republican voters, by the way.
Not many.
There are more Republican voters over 80 than under 30.
Wow.
And that,
here in Texas.
Yes.
Here in Texas.
Wow. That I did not know. Bud always has a nugget that I did not know.
Bud throws a zinger at us every so often.
Yeah, and then we just are left well, what?
I'm not one of those over 80.
All right, so going back to that Ragnar research, when they were asking these Republican primary voters who voted in multiple primaries, many of them, what's turning you off? Why aren't you voting this time? Why aren't you taking part in these surveys? And again, that number one reason was that they were unhappy with their Republican Party. The number two reason, unhappy with the current administration. I'm curious, when we talk about those two lines there, how is that? How does that inform Tallarico going forward, or anybody running on the Democratic ticket?
What does he do
that,
with it?
Does that shape your message? Does that make you inclined to go visit those more rural counties like Beto O'Rourke did? Because maybe there's something to pick up.
No.
Going does it
to
change
all
anything?
Going to all 254 counties did nothing for Beto O'Rourke. I mean, that was a giant waste of money.
With these gas prices. Nice, for a second.
I mean, the Democrats can't even turn out vote in the counties that they control,
right,
much less go out to Van Alstine and get people. That's urban now. I'm sorry,
but
go out to
exurbs,
to Wascom and get people to vote.
But does this change?
You know where that is in the state?
I do not know where Wascom is. You got me on that.
Where
one.
Where is that, bud?
It's on the Louisiana line.
And, okay.
And what's the best restaurant there?
Well,
bud?
The Wascom Cafe.
And the
story there is the Wascom Cafe used to face the old Highway 80 to Louisiana. And when they built the freeway behind the cafe, they came up and picked up the jacked up the cafe and turned it around so it faced the highway.
And then the best dish is blackened catfish, or what is it?
The black eyed peas are pretty good.
I want to go there just for that story.
You got to go on the road.
That's
amazing.
Tremendous.
We do need to do a road trip. You know,
we
should take this thing on
Let's
the road.
Do it.
Food and politics is great.
That's good.
Yes.
That's funny.
But does that shape their message? Does that shape the message for Democrats?
You know, I think it should. You know,
because that doesn't run counter to what Democrats feel. And if they can get some disaffected Republicans who are upset with the party and the administration, like Democrats
are. You know, there is so much low hanging fruit for the Democrats to like grasp onto with their whole bodies. Right. The war
That's
in
a good
Iraq,
image.
Just cling to the fruit.
With that hopeless sound, if the Democrats could ever.
I think what the reason people are so dissatisfied with the current Republican Party is because they're talking about all this weird stuff that nobody cares about. And Democrats just need to talk about that. And I think that Tallarico is in an interesting position to do that, because if you compare him to Beto, let's just compare him to Beto, right? He's religious. He hasn't said anything about taking everybody's guns away. Huge point in his favor,
he
right?
He did say God is non-binary, and the Republicans will use that to tear him
and
off.
And people are really exercised about this six-gender thing and his supposed veganism. But you know what? I just don't think
One taco.
Taco
policy is really, really in question.
It is. And that's fair. That's fair. We should hold him to account on that.
But I like egg and potato tacos.
I also do.
I'm sorry, interrupt.
That's fine. No, that's
fine. A black meat and rice taco with some guacamole?
Yes. But I just, you know, I think that if he can come in and say, hey, listen, I am not a crazy leftist. And I think on paper, he can lean that way, but he doesn't have to, right? Like, he can choose to emphasize the things that people actually care about right now and are actually talking about. And I think he's, in theory, setting his campaign up to do that. We will see if that pans out when he starts spending a lot of money and putting out these massive advertisements, what tone they take. And I think that tone will be dictated by whether it's Paxton or Cornyn. But, you know, I think he does have a real opportunity to actually talk about the things people want to hear about. And they want to hear about affordability. They don't want to hear about a ballroom and a slush fund. That's what they want to hear about. And he can talk about those things.
Regardless of how this race turns out here in Texas between these two Republican heavyweights, though, Bud, does this affect Republicans in the rest of the country going into the general election, if indeed the president's man gets in and it's Paxton, and money is going to have to be pulled into Texas,
right,
which is usually a very safe seat for Republicans. They usually don't have to commit a ton of money here. He has less money on hand, according to VoteBeats reporting.
Yeah.
Recently, much less money on hand than Tallarico. We know that a lot of money is going to flood into that Tallarico campaign nationally as well.
Well, this is why we see the Republicans trying to pile up more votes in the House and trying to build a wall to protect the Senate and trying to keep their control, because now more than ever there's going to be a lot of money spent in Texas. They're really worried about keeping control of the Senate. They just, if things went the wrong way, then they would lose control of the Senate. And we've thought all along they were going to lose control of the House. Now we think that's borderline. But the Republicans are trying real hard to stave that off. If you go back, you've quoted the survey a lot, and it's not in that survey, but if you go back and look at the other surveys, the voters who are not happy with the Republican Party, you really have to go back and ask them, how do you feel about the Democratic Party?
Right.
And then you get what Paxton will say. Paxton will say, Tallarico, this is the party of AOC, and this is the party of... He'll throw in all the national Democratic figures that are considered too liberal for Texas. And so he'll say, you don't want somebody in the Senate who's going to vote with these other Democrats. He's going to hold the National Democratic Party against James Tallarico, partly because there's very little Texas Democratic Party to hold against him.
So this sounds like a battle of your stay homes versus my stay homes then, because we talked about, you know, the disaffected Republicans who could stay home this time. You talked about how Democrats can't turn out their own base in the big cities. So is this a battle of, you know, how many people of yours stay home versus how many of mine stay home?
It really is. You know, it's a very people have a very unenthusiastic attitude toward the whole election. They're upset about the tone of political advertising. They're upset about all the attacks on each other, the intra-party attacks. They don't like getting the ads. They don't like the constant barrage. They want to turn off politics and government in general. We know that people. Sometimes there are a lot of people who won't read or watch because they're tired of it all. And so I think the enthusiasm level is lower than we would usually see for this election.
And Democrats, too, have an issue as far as, you know,
enthusiasm.
These bitter ads.
Yeah,
but these bitter ads, too.
Yeah.
And you folks not getting along. I think of District 33 congressional seat here that used to be, you know, is one that Mark Vesey held. He got drawn into Dallas County as opposed to crossing both counties here. This is Julie Johnson, the incumbent in District 32, running against Colin Allred after his last two Senate bids. This thing has just gotten nasty here between these two. And the same question with Republicans, Jessica. So if Allred makes it, are Julie Johnson's supporters not going to come out and back him, come November?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if either Julie Johnson or Colin Allred supporters are as personality attached to those candidates
Republicans
have become. And so I think that ultimately Democrats, especially Democrats in District 32, are pretty used to just voting, holding their nose and voting for the Democrat because that's how they have been successful in the past.
Who
wins
that race, do you think? Allred or Johnson?
Johnson, maybe, I think. And only because she's a slightly better campaigner, I think. But, you know, I think it could go either way. Then this could be entirely influenced. I had a really long conversation with a little group of Democrats a couple of weeks ago, and they just don't like Julie Johnson as a human being. That is a running theme I have heard about her. The people do not like her as a person.
But you think that she might be able to pull it out against Allred?
Only because her campaign mechanism, like her campaign infrastructure, is better. And she is a better candidate, I think, than Colin Allred on the merits. And in terms of, like, not on the merits, that's the wrong thing to say. There is a certain person that can, like, go hard on the campaign trail, and that person is not Colin Allred, you know? And I think that is the attitude that people have. You know, if you're a Democrat in the Dallas area, you want somebody that can go for it, right? And you want somebody that's not going to pull any punches. And so I think that's her, but I think the polls, I could be surprised.
But what do you think about that? Because Allred did finish 10 points ahead, but they had the Senate race. Jasmine Crockett versus
Jasmine
James Tallarico pulled everybody out.
And that's what seems. Well, I thought Julie Johnson was going to win. I said that in the beginning because, you know, because the numbers, the strong support that she had, the fact that she won the really tough race to get in the House, the Texas House, and to get into Congress. I really thought Julie Johnson would go ahead. But you have to give Colin Allred credit for leading in the first go round in the primary. Now the question is, who's turning out? Because you have so little other Democratic ballot. You have this lieutenant governor's race that's really important to the party and yet has had no discussion whatsoever.
Yeah.
If somebody gets on the Democratic ticket who doesn't even know who his own senator or lieutenant governor are, I can't even think of his name.
Velez.
Running against Vicki Goodwin.
That's
going to be, I just slipped my mind, but it just, not from Fort Worth, so I know that.
From Houston, you know, I believe.
If that winds up being the candidate, then that's going to hurt Tallarico and everybody else. You have a candidate like that. You have a runoff that's really important to the party with no discussion, and so it's a question of who all turns out. Johnson's voters are pretty intense,
yeah.
And you have to look at, I'm just guessing, if the Democrats want fighters, just like the Republicans want fighters, Julie Johnson is a little bit more of a fighter.
Yep.
And although Allred was ahead, it may be that Johnson's voters are more motivated to come out.
I'm curious.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll say this, Jasmine Crockett did say the other day at the event, we covered both of them the other day, and Crockett made a good point. Allred on January 6th was about to lay hands on somebody. He had his sleeves rolled up, I believe. But
right.
I know the point you're making, Bud, though, as far as who's a fighter. But
I was ready for Allred to come out yesterday with another, you know, a video from the weight room about when Johnson criticized Mark Vesey, of all people, who is a fighter when you want to be.
Keep Mark Vesey's name out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Who is a fighter when you want a fighter, and was a fighter in Austin. He can be tough, but he intentionally tries to be a leader and get along. And I really was surprised to see her criticize him even an off-the-record phone call.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, going into election day, this runoff election, that, you know, again, a lot of people, you know, tend to sleep through it on the day after Memorial Day. What are you both going to be looking for? Is there a particular thing that you're keeping a very close eye on for that night when we get those results?
Well, I'll say something very nerdy and policy-oriented, which is that the Republicans are choosing not to do precinct-based voting in Dallas, and that was absolutely chaotic and a terrible choice. For the first go-around, it is not happening this time. And so I think, just from a nice perspective, we're going to have faster results. There's going to be less confusion, and I think that's pretty good. I'm going to be watching the differences between, you know, the amount of turnout on election day, how many people actually stick around and cast their ballot, which we know suffered greatly last time because people showed up at the wrong polling locations and didn't want to go to a second one. I think there are going to be fewer problems. That said, there are also going to be fewer voters, I think, demonstrably. So I think it will be interesting for me to see which of the voters turns out, because I think we are looking, as you say, we're looking at an enthusiasm gap. We are looking at the nastiest, most expensive race that I've
in
ever
Texas
seen
history too, yeah.
in Texas history. And sure. And so, I think there are so many factors that make this so unique that that I'm just interested to see who actually gets people to the polls. But
Jason, I think we haven't even talked about Let's talk about the race where all the energy is. Let's talk about the race where the big money is now. Mays Middleton, Chip Roy.
Mm.
I mean, I think they're neck and neck.
It's been a slugfest, too.
I mean, I think that that's an incredible race. We've never had a real, you know, knockdown dragout like this at the Attorney General's level. This race is not chopped liver. I mean, you know, if just, you know, even if you think the Senate race is over, there are people on both sides. There are establishment people who are for Chip Roy. There are establishment people who are for Mays Middleton. There are Paxton voters who will vote for Chip Roy. There are Paxton voters who will vote for Mays Middleton. The way they have divided the voting base is different from any other Republican election we've ever seen.
So does
Roy is more of an independent. You mm-hmm. know, Middleton is kind of Austin establishment who's labeled himself MAGA. And the way they have split the voting, they've cut the pie in a very different way, and it's really going to be interesting to see which one comes out.
Okay, so come November then, does the Democratic nominee for Attorney General here in Texas have some hope because of that? Or are there going to be people who go, I can't vote for that guy because he wasn't my guy in the primary?
Oh, you know, you keep thinking a Republican's going to vote for somebody else. It's like
No,
that.
I mean skip the race, an undervote.
Yeah,
that big red over there, Bud's a little bit too much for Wheeler.
You've got Greg Abbott, you've got Senator Cruz, who isn't even on the ballot and has lots of time to go around and campaign for everybody else. You have all the force and energy of the Republican Party going around and saying, unite behind the Republican ticket. Lieutenant Governor Patrick, who's already almost threatening, saying, going to Republican committee, saying, you all have to vote for the whole Republican ticket. You know, it's like the emphasis this fall is going to be on unifying all these fractious Republican factions.
And so you don't think people will skip races?
I don't think people will skip the Attorney General's race at all. I think people say, who do you want enforcing law and order in the state of Texas? I mean, it's a pretty easy sell. I think the Democrats have a good chance. That was the closest race in 2018 when Beto ran close. It was the Paxton's challenger ran closer. And so I think that has a chance to be a pickup for the Democrats, depending how the state goes. But it just,
really?
But I don't think that Well, yeah. I mean, you look at these census numbers that came out this week. When I looked at it, it said 10,000 people from Los Angeles County have moved to Tarrant County since 2020. You know, it's like you look at the all the move-ins to the state, all the changes in the population, and then you multiply that times the enthusiasm gap. I mean, yeah, you could see how the Democrats, if they don't drop the ball, could achieve something. But when have the Democrats ever been able to hang on to the ball?
Well, for more than 30 years in this state, it's been a long
drought. As far as Chip Roy and MAGA Mays, as he's branded himself, who wins that race? Ken Paxton's backed Mays, and then Chip Roy has Ted Cruz.
I think Mays is still leading, but I mean, Chip Roy has really branded himself as a ferocious independent, and somehow he's been able to run all these ads and convince some people that Trump likes him, and so. You know, and
well,
Middleton
has too. Cornyn's ads are.
John Cornyn's is almost. People make fun of Cornyn's ads of, you voted with Trump 99%. Oh, 99% of the time. You know, it's like people make fun of that. But Chip Roy's ads with Trump voice himself, seem to be, convincing to some people. And just Chip Roy seems, again, we go back to the fighter. Chip Roy seems more like the fighter from his ads. Mays Middleton has kind of a bland appeal, and I think that Roy has really benefited from being aggressive.
Political careers will be on the line Tuesday night, guys. Thanks so much for the insight. Always appreciate it, Jessica. Bud, thank you.
Thank you.
How was the coffee?
It's Midland.
He's had about as much as you've had.
What's the name of the diner again that we've all got to try?
I said the Wascom Cafe. I don't even know it's there anymore, but it used to be. It's a good store.
It was a double wide that was facing Highway 80. They had a great black eyed pea dish and then some catfish.
Yeah, somebody will write it immediately and say, "Bud, that was torn down 20 years ago." I haven't been to Shreveport in a long time.
I won't go there though unless they have a good veggie taco to go along with that carnitas one.
Oh, that sounded very Democratic, Wheeler. You better.
No, I threw in the carnitas.
Okay, that's good. Bipartisan at best. Yeah, very purple.
Yeah.
Brisket. There we go.
Maybe Wascom should be the next episode. Don't make a special trip. To all of our listeners in Wascom, we apologize.
We apologize.
For Bud there.
It's Bud, not me.
Thanks so much for listening and watching. We appreciate it. See you next week.